PSNY.
Gotta walk the Kenobi finale off, man. I'm gonna rewatch that and then take a good long walk.
Yeah, it's that got me in the feels.
Like, I'm not gonna say it was perfect Star Wars content, but out of all the Disney Plus stuff they put out, it's probably the best they've done so far, I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually talking to my brother about this. Like, I think you can have some legitimate gripes or issues with the show in general, just like kind of certain directions they went, but that episode, that finale was. That's core Star Wars viewing for any future fan going forward.
Like, yeah, it's like prequels. What then? Kenobi, right into that. Like, don't worry about the animated shows. Like, that'll explain everything in between. But like, just worry about Kenobi right now.
Yeah. It's. I look forward to the day when I'm going to show my kids. Like, sit down, go prequels, Kenobi, Rogue One, and then original trilogy.
Anyway, folks, this is a Bleacher Creatures Yankees podcast and the Star Wars adjacent dialogue episode 133. Excuse me, brought to you as always by Elite Sports New York, Crossing Broad, XL Media, Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. We are not going to have the Michael Jordan flu game of podcast today, folks. I am fully recovered from that ear infection. Still got a little bit of a cough, but such is life. Can't believe we did that last week.
Yeah, it was officially an ear infection.
Yeah. I don't know whether I went to urgent care either like the day before or the day after recording that, but yeah, it was definitely an ear infection. They gave me, they're right here on the desk, got me these antibiotics right here, these like giant pink horse pills. but yeah, cleared everything out. It was gnarly too. You ever have like an ear infection and then you get on the meds and then you just kind of feel it all drain out?
Oh yeah,
it's like your ear unclogs and then some. You're like, oh, that's a good feeling, but also kind of gross.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know who was calling me there, but
don't they know we're podcasting?
Huh? I know, right? I gotta figure out how to like unsync my phone from the computer. Anyway, let's get right into Yankees talk. We'll talk about the Blue Jays and subsequent Rays series in a little bit, but on Friday, Alec, Aaron Judge has an arbitration hearing, and it sounds like he's really going to test the market this year. You haven't heard anything about an extension being agreed to beforehand. Yankees are offering $17 million. He's asking for $21 million. I don't see how the arbitrator rules against him, especially this year.
Yeah, especially like, yeah, as you said, he's got 25 home runs on the year. I'm like, maybe he could have ruled against Judge at the beginning of the season, but I don't know how you look at his body of work this year and just be like, oh yeah, he's not worth, what was it, $21 million you said?
Yeah, so that's what he's asking for.
I don't get it. And you know, I'm nervous. I'm concerned because Judge is such a crucial part of the team.
Yeah.
And the future, especially like, you know, regardless of how long of a contract extension he may work out with by the end of the year, you have to imagine that the Yankees' true window of like go for it all is probably in the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how the team will handle doing that if he's not on the team. You know, like he's such a driving force behind it. And you know, yeah, the way Cashman kind of hardballs his players, it's concerning. I mean, you know, we've seen it before with guys who, and no disrespect to Judge, but we've seen it before with guys who meant a lot more to the organization than he has.
It's a very daunting feeling knowing that Aaron Judge could very well decide to leave the Yankees and just take the money to go wherever. I know that I know that on their podcast, Joel Sherman and John Heyman, they listed the Giants as a potential spoiler, just because, you know, he's from California, like Central Cal especially.
Yeah.
And not only that, you're right, Cashman does kind of have a tendency to play hardball, but it also begs the question, Frank Cashman has had this job for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Like, since 1998, he is, like, 30 years old, he has been in the GM's chair. In that time, looking back on guys who have signed with the Yankees, left the Yankees in free agency, guys who he's traded, it's hard to find a player who Cashman has traded and it worked out badly for the Yankees because they went on to star elsewhere. Robinson Cano, okay, like, everyone was ready for his head on a spike. What is he? What has he done since then? He's out of baseball before the contract's even up.
Yeah, with a couple suspensions to his name.
Yeah. So, and similarly, who else? Didi Gregorius, considered the heartbeat of the team, with all, like, he's like, after the wins, all the Twitter with all the emojis, went to the Phillies, hasn't done much since.
Yeah. No, I completely understand. Yeah.
But Judge is very different, just because he is kind of in that same class of Giancarlo Stanton, where on the eye test, it's a once in a generation type talent. You talk all the time, oh, I'm hitting 50 again this year.
Yeah. I mean, those are the guys who can just say, I'm going to hit 50 this year and actually go out and do it. Like, it's like, oh yeah, like 50. Okay, cool. I mean, we're talking, there was a while there where we were talking, he could get 60. Like,
yeah,
you know, Judge, if you like, really, if you think about it, Judge is a top five player in the league, maybe top three.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he, when he's healthy, and again, everyone, you know, yeah, the best held ability of mark. Yeah, I'm like, the best ability of all players is availability. Like, we all recognize that. But when he's healthy, I personally feel like that gap between him and a guy like Trout is significantly diminished. But then even again, like, you know, you got a guy like Trout who, if he's healthy, you know, it's the same boat. So if you're sitting up there and you think of the two, the top three guys, I think you can, base off of just brand recognition, it's Trout, it's Judge, and probably at this point now Otani, but like,
yeah,
you know.
And even now, like, you say, oh, Trout's the best player when healthy. We saw in the series against the Yankees, Trout, like, he's not that old by any stretch, but he's also been in the league long enough now, gotten enough reps on the body that you can tell that he's getting to the point where there are times where he's not seeing the ball as well, where he just kind of, he gets himself into a funk.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a where this is at threat of going into a tangent here about Trout, but you know, there's a giant hole in Trout's swing, and pitchers just are unable to exploit it.
Is there really?
I don't understand why pitchers just don't do it. Mike Trout does not hit a high pitch and an inside pitch well.
I think, like, we've seen. Yeah, I mean, I think we saw in the Yankees series that they were really taking advantage of that, because I do recall he was getting pitched high and tight quite a bit in that series.
Yep. You challenge him with high heat and you challenge him in, he's not going to hit it well. And, like, look, that's not like a diss on him. A lot of hitters don't hit those pitches well.
Well, yeah, because the whole point with a big bat is that you want to get him up and in and tie him up.
Yeah. But then you watch the series he had against Seattle, and it's like, what the hell are they doing? Just throw up and in on him. If you walk him, you walk him. If he dies, he dies. It's like, but like,
do not give him a pitch to hit. No, we're
not giving him a pitch to hit.
No, we'll just pound the zone. Dare him to hit our best pitch.
Yeah.
Okay. And he will.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's kind of the same thing. Judge is not very good at, like, the low and in pitch, you know, especially that kind of fading changeup. Every hitter has these weaknesses that they can't, you know, improve on, but then maybe pitchers just don't know where they're throwing the ball.
Well, I'd imagine guys like Judge and Stanton by extension, and we'll throw Joey Gallo in this conversation too, just because they're all so damn big, that I'd imagine they have a harder time reading balls down in the zone than others, because, like, we've seen how many times Judge gets burned by that low strike.
Yeah, but, like, you know, and I think we saw him get burned on that swinging wise a lot earlier in his career, and then now he just kind of really just gives up on it. It's like, hey, if the umpire calls it a strike, he's going to call it a strike. I'm not going to swing at that unless it's like a hanging curveball, or and I can go down and get it. So
Now that you mentioned it, the only big power hitter I've seen hit those balls real down the zone was David Ortiz in his prime.
Another guy is Pete Alonso.
Oh, Pete Alonso
is fantastic. He's one of the most athletic hitters, which is funny because it seems like he never does anything athletic. Like, the dude is so goofy and when he, even when he tries to pimp a home run, it's like the most cringeworthy thing I've ever seen. But the way
Donaldson's was pretty bad in Toronto the other day.
Oh, well, I saw people loving that one. I think Talking Jake and John Boy Media were just like, that was pretty cold. I think even Jared Carabas from Barstool.
I'll rewatch it, but just kind of like the little like backwards walk. It's like, all right, that's a little too 90s hip hop for me, dude.
I remember there was one time, I don't know if he was in Toronto. I think he was in Oakland. He had a walk-off home run. He hits it. He kind of did the same thing, but you just see him start beaming with a smile.
Right.
That was like the funniest thing I've seen him do. But yeah, like a guy like Alonso, he gets into his legs really well, and I don't want to say golfs the ball off the ground, but
yeah,
he just works under it so well. And like probably the best hitter in the game who does that. Him and Trout are probably the best ones to do it.
Yeah. But I don't know. It should be an interesting hearing. I mean, if I'm Judge's agent going into this meeting with the Yankees, I'm going to Cashman and I'm saying, like, you see the numbers, I see the numbers. Is this really the hill that you're going to die on? Let's just actually sit down and talk to each other. Let's build this relationship.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the frustrating part. It's like, is this really the hill that Cashman wants to die on? Because, you know, you give all that money to Hicks, and credit to Hicks. Hicks has turned it around. You know me, I've been very critical, but you know,
I mean, he's succeeding, albeit in kind of like an ugly manner. He's not getting, except for the triple the other night, the hits he's been getting have not been pretty.
Right, yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, is they don't ask how, they ask how many.
Yeah, you're right.
But, you know, it just seems like Cashman finds himself in this situation where you got a guy who you need to pay, but then you have all this money tied into guys you didn't need to pay. Like a guy like Hicks. You took on the money for Donaldson. I prefer to have Donaldson at third than, you know, having Gio Urshela there.
Like, Donaldson's having a low-key elite season in the field, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's a fantastic defender.
It's astounding. He's almost like – he's defying age almost. I think he's had his DRS most recently was +6, and that's a career high for him.
Yeah, I mean, like – but I don't know how – like, I just don't know how Cashman can sit there and be like – I don't know, like we don't want to spend the money on this kind of player when it's like, but you're spending the money on these different players who are less important.
Look, I think that the initial offer that Cashman made, that was more than fair. That was a perfectly reasonable offer.
I agree.
I think that now you realize, okay, he's gotten his health under control. Maybe he's only performing this well because it's a contract year. Mm-hmm. So I said in a piece I did recently, this is going to go one of two ways. He's going to go either the Bernie Williams route and they're going to eventually come, he's going to play the market, then go back to the team he's known his whole life. Or he's going to go the Robinson Cano route and take the money and run. And then we're just going to have to trust if Cashman's willing to let him walk, he's got some reasons for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's going to suck. And I hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah. I think my unrealistic demands would be, okay, Juan Soto better be a freaking Yankee. Like that,
seriously.
That's, you know, that's the only guy I would sit there and be like, okay, if we're losing Judge, that's the guy I want.
Or Volpe or Peraza comes up and they've got like double 30 home run power.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I mean, like, but we can't really base our hopes and dreams on those kids just now. I'm looking at the outs above average leaderboard on Statcast.
Yeah,
or Baseball Savant. Donaldson is seventh with two outs above average, and he's prevented two runs. And in fifth is DJ LeMahieu.
Nice.
He's three outs above average. So we've had some really good defense.
The fielding's a lot better this year after there was a dumpster fire last couple of years.
Oh yeah, you can.
Let's shift to the team's performance as a whole. Okay, even with last night's loss to the Rays aside, this team's doing exactly what it needs to be doing still.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You cannot sit there and complain at all about this run.
You can nitpick certain things in the losses here and there, like in the Sunday against the Blue Jays when the Yankees lost 10-9. All right, I wouldn't have had Luis Severino start the sixth inning. I would have gone right to Miguel Castro and just like cut it off at the pass there.
Yeah, that's a thing that Boone does a lot, it seems, where for whatever reason
he's gotten a lot better about it this year though.
Yeah, but I feel like I've seen it once or twice more with like a guy like Severino. He throws him out there and he tries to get him that extra out, and a lot of the times it seems like Severino doesn't get it, and then all of a sudden you're putting your bullpen in a higher leverage situation than it needed to be in the first place.
I mean, you're a catcher too, so you'll agree with me when I say this about the Sunday loss. Textbook example of how walks will kill you.
Yeah, absolutely.
By 1,000 cuts.
Yeah, absolutely. You just keep giving them, especially to a team like the Blue Jays. Like, you know, they've had their issues, and in the beginning of the year, they've had their issues scoring or driving in guys who are in scoring position. But, you know, that team is just so deadly and so dangerous. So
one thing that I've also noticed about the Blue Jays, not just this last series, but over the past couple of years too, like the real prime, okay, we're introducing Vlad and Bo Bichette, like really once they've started coming up, they really don't chase a lot of pitches out of the zone either.
No. I think Bichette was one of the guys where he first came up. He was really good at his chase rate. I don't know what their numbers are at right now. I haven't looked. But yeah, you know, they got a pretty like Yankee-esque approach to it. It's like they're going to make you work for it. So, and look, at the end of the day, does the loss suck? Yeah, because you had that like such a good lead to begin with.
Yeah.
But the offense showed up. Yeah, the bullpen didn't get it done, but the bullpen is allowed to have a clunker here and there. You know,
Nestor's allowed to have a clunker here and there. Yeah. I mean, we talked last show about how every Cy Young candidate along their road to winning the trophy, they're going to have a couple bad starts in there. Nestor had a bad one. In Toronto, look what the Yankees did to Alek Manoah, who they have not been able to hit up until that game. And then sure enough, they tagged him for four runs.
Exactly. Look, I mean, you got Gerrit Cole's start against Minnesota, and then look what he did against the Rays.
Yeah.
So, they played five games or six games.
Against who?
Between Toronto and Tampa. Was it a four-game series against Toronto?
No, it was it was a three. Let me double check. It was either a three or a four. Why can't I remember anything?
They played five games and they're 3-2?
They played five games. All right, so they swept the Rays at home.
Oh yeah, I'm actually forgetting about that. So
yeah, so swept the Rays at home. 1-2. Yeah, they're five games on the road, they're 3-2.
Five games on the road, 3-2, and then that Tampa game or Tampa series was 3 or 4. I can't remember.
The one at home was 3.
Okay, so they played 8 games and they're 6-2.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I'll tell you
what happens if they play 500 ball for the rest of the season, right? You know,
and not only that, so many times last year we saw the Yankees, they'd be trailing in the, let's say, the first or second inning and the game was over. Mm-hmm. This year, yeah, they've lost some games. They've never lost their fight in those games, though.
Yeah.
Vitally important for any championship team or any championship team that's trying to win a championship.
Yeah.
And just looking at the Rays' loss last night for their context, okay, Nestor Cortes was facing the Rays for the third time in about a month, so they were probably picking up on his stuff. You saw with Isaac Paredes and Harold Ramirez, they were waiting for the cutter on the inside, and they were just timing accordingly. The fact that Isaac Paredes, who's hitting 188 on the year coming into the game, hits 3 home runs, okay, it's a freak win. It's a freak win for the Rays. And, oh, surprise, it's in Tropicana Field. The Rays were doing a bullpen game. The Yankees never do well under those circumstances. They just don't.
Yeah. You just kind of, like, wash your hands and you're like, all right, on to, you know, the final game of the series. And, you know, still have a chance to win the series. And what's the lead right now, 11 games?
Let's see, because the Blue Jays are playing this afternoon. So the Blue Jays are currently up 7-0 on the White Sox in the top of the sixth inning. So if the Blue Jays win that, Yankees lose tonight. Yeah, it's 11 games, so nobody gains or loses ground.
Yeah.
It's a full reset. Although, no, I take that back. The Red Sox have bumped themselves up in third place right now.
Okay. Like, again, this is how important it is that in your first, you know, almost 70 games, and you've already won 50 of them, so you're allowed to drop a few here and there, and it requires these other teams to go on unbelievable runs, which it seems like Toronto has done before, Boston has done before, and Tampa has done this year, And how much ground did they actually gain?
Little to none.
Yeah, none. That, like, again, that's the importance. And, you know, Twitter is a cesspool, and you see sometimes overreactions, but
don't go on Yankees Twitter, folks. It's a terrible, terrible place.
Oh my God, I saw something. Yeah, it's like, what are we complaining about? Like, and you know me. I tend to have, like, pretty high standards when it comes to Yankees. This is a bad loss whenever this happened. You heard it a lot last year. I wasn't watching the game. I was at work last night, and I saw the final score. It was like, oh, Yankees lost? Okay. Yeah, I just went on about my day. I don't care.
Judge almost tied it at the end, too. Like, I was out on my porch just, like, getting some air. And then I see out of the corner of my eye, Judge is up pinch hitting. I turn around, and, oh, hits a fly ball, caught at the wall. So almost tied it. The fact that Marwin Gonzalez, of all people, cranked a two-out, two-run shot to make it 5-4 in the ninth, this is a tough and gritty team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I want to
see in the New York groove. That said, the Astros series coming up, I have some concerns about that, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I have concerns. It's just it's going to be a tough series.
Yeah, because like they're one of the few teams that can actually match the Yankees in terms of pitching, because Justin Verlander is having a phenomenal comeback season.
Oh yeah, my fantasy team knows that for sure.
But at the same time, you gotta hope. Okay, well the Yankees have been hitting the ball a lot better where the Astros haven't, and their success right now comes mostly from being in a very bad division. So
yeah
I mean, like the West is almost kind of like the central light this year in terms of with the Angels collapse, God, like that really changed the landscape of the whole division.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of disappointing performances to come out of some of these other divisions. I mean, yeah,
I think it was
are we surprised? Are we surprised about the Angels? I mean, you want to see guys like Ohtani and Trout do well, but I mean, yeah, like,
I mean, we're not surprised by the Angels, but I am surprised that they lost so many games in a row and then canned their manager like before the All-Star break.
Yeah, yeah, I might talk about a panic move.
Yeah,
right? Like, well, and I think John Heyman, who you've heard me criticize a lot, wrote a pretty interesting article, I thought, for the New York Post a few days or like a week or two ago about like the Ohtani conundrum.
Yeah.
It's like, what are the Angels going to do? Are they going to re-sign Ohtani to the value that he's worth? And if they do that, it's a death sentence. They're not going to be able to build around that.
Yeah.
Maybe Ohtani will take a significant pay cut to help they fill out the team around him. He shouldn't. He doesn't owe the Angels anything.
No, I think that knowing Artie Moreno, he's going to try to unload Rendon's contract, kind of the way the Tigers tried to unload Prince Fielder's.
Yeah, but who's going to take it? Like,
yeah, exactly. They're like,
he would have to package their top prospect guys who are not even doing that well. Like, you would have to try to say, hey, take Rendon, we're going to give you Joe Adele.
They'd have to like half gut their farm system too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so no, I don't think any team is going to feel bad for them. They're going to do them any favors. My biggest disappointment out of the AL West is Seattle.
Yeah.
I was hoping they were going to take that next step, but they're in a free fall.
I don't know what it is about the Mariners, man. Like, because 538, 5-6 years ago, it did a deep dive on the Mariners, and statistically, they are the most unlucky team in history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but the Astros will be tough. I hope that we at least get a series split out of that, because as far as I'm concerned, that's the ALCS matchup coming up. We'll see. Maybe early. But shifting gears, it's now time, folks, for some way too early trade deadline talk. The trade deadline is August 2nd. We're recording this on June 22nd. Excuse me. But we all know that the Yankees are probably going to do something at the deadline, Alec. And the more I think about it, it's got to be the bullpen, because Chapman, he's hurt, but he's still unreliable. Jonathan Loaisiga, he's still working his way back. Chad Green's a big loss. Are you going to feel more comfortable if this team adds another bullpen arm? Because I sure am.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, you can never have too many bullpen arms. You can't have too many guys who are going to be ready to go out of that pen. You know, it's it's kind of in regards to Chapman and Loaisiga, like those would be additions in and of themselves whenever they come back.
Right.
You know, you're
Chapman, I think, throws a bullpen money. Tomorrow.
What's that?
Chapman, I think, throws a bullpen tomorrow.
Well, there we go. So yeah, I would be very like, I think adding another arm will be crucial. My question is just, where is that arm?
Well, lucky for you, I've got some names to rattle off.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to kick things off. First guy on my list, Michael Gibbons.
Michael Gibbons? Oh, Mike, Michael, former O? Mike.
Former Oriole Michael Gibbons, who's currently with the Cubs right now. He's not having the best year, but I think I figured out why.
What's that?
He's not throwing his fastball as much, which he doesn't have the same velocity anymore, but he's still in the 93rd percentile in terms of fastball spin.
Okay.
But his ERA is somewhere in like the low mid fours. And I think it's because the Cubs have him throwing his slider more often as opposed to his changeup, which has always been like his best secondary pitch, at least in his prime years. With the Yankees, as a late inning guy, okay, at worst, he's Miguel Castro, and you just have to worry about the walks. At best, he knows the division, 3.45 career ERA against the AL East.
Yeah, that could be a good experience arm to pick up.
Because he's 32.
He looks like he kind of throws a slightly different arm angle. I haven't seen him pitch in a while. Right? Yeah, he's a little three quarters.
He's kind of got like the whole like three quarter sidearm thing going on. Still strikes guys out, still has a good expected batting average. They're not going to chase, and they might draw walks against him. But again, just someone to help get the bridge to Holmes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, definitely a low leverage dude to get you to the big guns. Yeah, I don't mind that.
All right, option number two, real throwback here, a former rookie of the year turned great reliever, Michael Fulmer.
Interesting. You know,
slider machine, lots of soft contact, big whiff rate.
Yeah, you know, I've never been big on Fulmer, but looking at his numbers, looking at the underlying metrics, I honestly, looking at that, maybe I prefer him than over Gibbons.
Yeah, I mean, between the two, I'd rather have Fulmer just because, yeah, he's a fly ball pitcher in Yankee Stadium, but he also doesn't get burned by hard contact. He's like really mastered his slider. I think he throws like the fastball and changeup still a little bit more.
He's not giving up anything on his slider.
Yeah.
It's got a negative -7 run value, and he's throwing it 230.
-7. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So with him, then you're running the risk that, okay, maybe they'll get like some cheapy home runs off of him because Yankee Stadium is a matchbox. But again, like he knows how to pitch in that in the face of these arm injuries, he taught himself how to pitch again, not just how to throw, how to actually pitch. I mean, you said it yourself with the slider numbers just now.
Okay. That's a good one. Who else you got?
All right. Hear me out on this one.
Uh-oh.
This guy, he disappeared for a while. He's resurfaced out west, and he's been money. He's a little older, but he's an expiring contract, and he's actually kind of having a career season. Former Red Sox standout Daniel Bard.
Oh, okay.
So I actually looked at Fangraphs recently. He's got a career-high Ks per nine going right now. Like the problems are still there. He's a high-velocity guy who draws a lot of walks. But he's also throwing the ball harder than he has his entire career. His average fastball velocity, I think, is close to 98. Yeah, he's just blowing the ball by, guys. He's got a 1.98 ERA with the Rockies out of the Rockies bullpen.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers right now.
Like, again, he's 36. He's an older guy. I think he turns 37 he turns 37 on Saturday. I looked this up. He's about to turn 37, and he's pitching like he's 27.
He's a sinker baller.
Yeah.
Yeah. -2 run value on that sinker. His best pitch looks like it's a slider. So good sinker slider mix.
Okay, great. So we'd essentially have two Clay Holmes in the bullpen.
Yeah. Well, then that actually makes you wonder, like, what can he do in the hands of Matt Blake?
Yeah. And at age 37, no less.
Yeah, man, you did your research on this. You got me sold on Bard and possibly on Fulmer. I like
Okay.
Yeah.
We got two left. Are you ready for the next one?
Oh boy. All right. One of these David Robertson?
I'm not going to answer that. Okay. Well, you know what? Fine. Let's leave right here. Yes, David Robertson is one of them. And yes, I will explain why. He's 37 years old, but Alec, you know me. I've always loved David Robertson. Love hearing Sweet Home Alabama come on at Yankee Stadium. It's perfectly reasonable to see why he would benefit, and the Yankees would, from a third tour in the Bronx. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the guy who brings kind of that steady presence in the back, even though he's not what he used to be. He's a guy who's been there, who's done that. I like looking, let's see what his numbers are.
99th percentile for fastball spin, 99th for expected batting average, 87th for average exit velocity. So yeah, this guy basically didn't pitch for 3 years and is back like he never left.
Yeah, he still has some good movement on his pitches. He's not getting hit around hard. It's certainly not what it used to be. Get this. In 2017, his curveball had a minus 12 run value.
Damn.
This year, it's only at a minus 3. But again, that's still...
Well, he's 37, so...
No,
but Robertson, you said he's a steadying presence. Not only that, this is someone who can serve the bullpen in multiple roles. He can be your standard middle relief guy. He can be a setup man. He can close.
Yeah. Yeah, he's your Swiss Army knife for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially with Chad Green gone, I think he'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. I think he would be maybe a slightly more dependable Chad Green type.
The only real thing against it, you were saying he'd be a more dependable Chad Green type. Continue with that.
Well, just because it seems like the league has kind of gotten onto Green,
yeah,
and he's had a hard time trying to figure out what's the best way to not be predictable. We kind of know what he throws and how often he throws it, and it doesn't. He's lost some of that zip on the fastball.
Yeah.
So I feel like if I'm looking at David Robertson's numbers here, expecting batting average is top 1% in the league. Expected slugging is top 3%. I mean, there's a lot of red, which is good. But he's not going to be a guy who will blow it by them anymore. I feel like he's more crafty or more wily than Chad Green.
Oh, yeah. So, Chad Green and Aroldis Chapman both have similar problems where if one of their pitches isn't working, none of their pitches are working.
Yeah.
Because if Chapman doesn't have his fastball, you better hope he has that slider, and he's not hanging it up in the zone. Chad Green similarly, if he doesn't have that fastball, you better hope the curveball's biting, or you better hope that he can at least paint the corners with the fastball instead of hanging it up in the zone.
Yeah, I'm looking at Chad Green's kind of stat line and just his metrics. He hasn't been good. Since 2017, and even his years after that seems to be more of a byproduct of kind of luck.
Yeah.
Like in 2017, a lot of red, high K rate, low walk rate. He had a 1.83 ERA that year, and his expected ERA was 2.63. So even that was a little bit of luck, but that was his best mark until 2020 when he had an expected ERA of 2.22. But his actual ERA was 3.51. So he had some
interesting.
So it's kind of this interesting, when he does well, it seems like he's performing above his means. But then when he has that in 2020, he got shafted there.
Right.
But then everything else on that is kind of on par. 2019, a 4.17 ERA with an expected ERA of 4.17. 2021, an ERA of 3.12, an expected ERA of 3.22.
2019 was also a weird year for Green because that's when he was used as the opener a bunch, not so much the late inning guy.
That's true. This year before the injury, ERA of 3, expected ERA of 3.29. It's different than what you see with David Robertson, who, what you see on the traditional stat line with Robertson, you can pretty much see on the underlying metrics with a negligible difference.
there will be some risk in bringing him back just because of how he exited the last time around. Because it was free agency, but you remember he kind of like allegedly withheld bonuses from some members of the coaching staff. Like,
oh, that's right.
The playoff bonuses. And then he basically said, oh, like that was Cashman's decision. It was like the team made that decision, kind of deflected. The way I see it, a lot of the guys who were there when that happened aren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I think enough time has passed where it's like, hey, this guy knows the team. He's been here before. He can pitch. He was on the 2009 World Series team. Just another almost Brett Gardner type influence in the clubhouse. All right, you ready for the last guy I picked?
I am ready.
All right, so as you're well aware, Alec, the Yankees are not shy about acquiring closers at the deadline or just adding closers in general and using them as setup guys.
Yep.
This guy, very successful closer. I think he has one, maybe two World Series rings right now. He got an expiring contract, also a little older, Kenley Jansen.
Hmm.
Again, doesn't have a lot of velocity, but knows how to spin that fastball, strikes a lot of guys out. He's kind of like Rivera, throws the cutter. He's not nearly as dominant with it, but he can still close. He's got 368 career saves. And he's 34, and he's a weird fit in the Yankee bullpen, but he's pitching well enough that, I don't know, I think it could work.
You think the Braves would trade him, though?
Well, that's the other thing. It very much depends on where the Braves are in the NL East race this time next month. Right now, they've been running hot, and they're in the playoff picture where they have no reason to trade him. But if either the Mets pull away or they collapse without Freddie Freeman, like they did earlier in the season, then maybe the Braves will look to sell him off, just because I think he's making between $15 and $18 million this year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, looking at his numbers, it looks good. I mean, he's got a -6 run value on the cutter, which is pretty much on par with how it's been. Oh, damn. Never mind. In 2017, his cutter had a -19 run value. -19.
And it's -12 now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he can still pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then if you look at his ERA of 3.03, but an expected ERA of 1.95, he's not walking a lot of guys. He actually got his walk rate down from issues previous year, striking out. He's striking out at a higher level since he was as a Dodger in 2016, 2017.
Damn.
He's not getting hit hard. Yeah, hitters are not doing much. Yeah, I mean, that would be a good guy to go after, but I how realistic it would be, because, you know, you just got.
Look, all this being said, I don't think we should expect Cashman to land maybe any of these arms. I mean, I think there, if there's one he should prioritize, it should obviously be Robertson, just because of that pre-existing relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But look what he did last year. Oh, he got Clay Holmes out of nowhere. It just seemed like a nothing acquisition. Now he's the closer. So there's probably some random middle reliever who's got several arbitration years left, who Cashman's been eyeing for years at this point, who fans certainly aren't thinking of, who we certainly aren't thinking of, and he'll probably surprise us in August, right?
Yeah. I mean, kind of like full trust in Matt Blake that whoever they get is going to be the right guy. I'm sure he has a lot of input on it as well. Where
the way Matt Blake has worked with this staff, man, on one hand, I'd be thrilled if he parlayed it into a managing job. But on the other hand, I don't ever want him to leave New York.
Yeah. No, we should.
He's been a godsend.
If the Yankees win the World Series on the strength of the pitching, he needs to have a statue erected outside of Yankee Stadium.
Matt Blake, the statue. Oh, man, that is a take.
Monument Park, put up a plaque. Just Matt Blake. And he'll still be coaching. Just the greatest pitching coach ever.
Matthew Blake, here we go.
Because now we no longer have to sit there and listen to people criticize the Yankees pitching. Oh, is the Yankees rotation good enough? Oh, they're more than good enough. They are more than good enough.
Sub 3 ERA in June.
Yeah.
Shifting back to the bullpen help. And also, for all we know, maybe Cashman's plan isn't to add to the bullpen, because remember, there's still a lot of in-house options. We already talked about Loaiza. He's about to start throwing again. Chapman, he's got a bullpen coming back. And for all we know, he could be lights out the rest of the way.
Mm.
Zach Britton, he had Tommy John. He's saying that he wants to come back in September and that he was working with Verlander in terms of his recovery.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he said, I forget who he talked to, but he more or less said with Verlander, the key to his recovery has been just believe that you're going to get back to where you are and that your arm will stay strong.
Right. You kind of have to work past that self-doubt.
Yeah.
And they kind of let it loose. And trust
now Verlander's 39 years old. He's having a Cy Young season again. David Garcia too could be an option if he keeps struggling as a starter. I mean, he's hurt right now with a finger issue, but I think we've seen enough over the past couple of years. He's not a starter.
Yeah, probably not. But one name I'm really interested in is going to be Albert Abreu.
I forgot he came back.
And then there's that who's that righty with the righty? He's like in Triple A. I think his last name is like it's like I want to say like Lorensky.
Hayden Wisniewski.
Wisniewski, yeah. Like that would be an interesting option because
JP Sears too.
JP Sears, Michael, like we already have Michael King and Clark Schmidt, but like
you
know, yeah, there are a lot of options and a lot of internal ways to go about it, and then you can pivot at the deadline and you know maybe get an extra bench bat or figure out.
You could also stand pat with a guy like Ron Marinaccio, who's looked great with his changeup.
Yeah, that's actually really encouraging that he seems what he was sent down and then now he's come back and it looks like he really has figured it out.
Yeah, because it seemed early on, because I remember from his earliest appearances, I think during the Red Sox series or shortly after, the general feel I got from him, maybe you did too, was okay, the stuff is there. He just needs to learn how to take a deep breath when there's runners on base.
Yeah. He kind of looked like a deer in headlights just a little bit. And you understand why. Dude grew up a Yankee fan.
Yeah, Tom's River.
I was going to say another Tom's River kid. So anytime he's pitching in Yankee Stadium, they're going to be like, oh, you know, this kid's from Tom's River, which I have family in Tom's River.
I was 12 years old when Todd Frazier led Tom's River to the Little League World Series.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, this is a kid who's my age, who's a Yankees fan, lives just down the road from the city. He's won the Little League World Series, and now he is standing on the field next to Derek Jeter. I both loved and hated that kid so much, 12 years old. And then he became a Yankee, and things became full circle.
Yeah. So, but I mean, wouldn't it be a story if he becomes a crucial part of, you know, this bullpen? And he seems to have figured it out. Is you know, you said it yourself. His stuff plays. His changeup's got a -4 run value. His four seamer's got a -3. So he's pairing up those pitches really nicely. And
he doesn't have a ton of velocity either.
No, his
was like 94, 95.
Well, it says here his fastball velo puts him in the 66th percentile. Where is the as I try to find this?
It's not overly important. It's just more like we established. Okay, Marinaccio is also an option.
Yeah. Okay, he averages 94.4. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like plenty of options. You kind of got, you know, a whole stable, as Kevin Cash would say.
Yeah, and his stable is it's kind of falling to the ground.
Yeah, they're walking a tightrope, it seems like.
I mean, we said this in our group chat with the big one from the old job for a while. Yeah, this is a cool idea, but on the whole, it's unsustainable because, like, just look at what happened with the Yankees like 10 or so years ago when Scott Proctor was used so much. Okay, yeah, it's good to have all these reliable arms when you're only using them as 1-2 winning relievers, and you're pretty much working the system where they have to be ready to throw at the drop of a hat sometimes, not like any set role, that's going to wear on their arms.
Well, yeah, not even just that. It's like you have major leaguer, you have major league starting pitchers who are not going to have their stuff every start they go. I think I think it was John Flaherty who said on the broadcast, he was talking to Messina, and Messina was like, I'm good for 30 starts. 10 starts, I'm going to have my best stuff. 10 starts, I'm not going to have anything. And then 10 starts, I'm going to have to figure it out. Like
that is the most Mike Mussina quote I've ever heard.
Yeah, yeah.
That is spoken like an econ major from Stanford.
Yeah, but like it makes sense. Talking about those bullpen arms from all those years ago, shout out to Aaron Small's 10-0 record in 2005.
Hey-o.
But yeah, like you know, when you're over relying on all these relief pitchers, you're increasing the likelihood that there's just going to be one day in a stretch of games where they're not going to have it, or two games where they're not going to have it. If a starting pitcher struggles to have it after 5 days, what do you think a relief pitcher is going to do? It's kind of like, you know, it was kind of my thoughts. I was following the game, the first game of the Rays series, and Boone brought in Peralta. And I was questioning the move because, like, he just got hit hard in Toronto. He clearly didn't have it. You got a close game here in Tampa. Why are we going back to him again? And sure enough, he got the job done, but sure enough, he had to find his way through it.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the tightrope you got to walk a bit when you're throwing guys a lot. And you know, I think Aaron Boone has handled the bullpen situation really well this season. But when you're a team like Tampa, who that's like not just a crucial part of your game plan, but like a pillar of your game plan. Yeah, it's going to come back to bite you. And, like, you can't just sit there, you know, you're not going to stick your hand in front of a snake and then be shocked that it bites you.
Excuse me. It's strange because you could see with, like, well, I don't want to say that this is the end of Tampa for sure, because in hindsight, they've just run headfirst into bad luck across the board this year with injuries, the offense not performing well. But in the prime Tampa years, we'll say like 2018 up until today, it's very clear that from Kevin Cash's perspective, the bullpen game, it's also kind of a head game, like we've talked about. How hitters, they're like constantly trying to pretty much guessing how to approach their pitching because they don't know who they're going to be facing in like any given inning. So on top of that, you now have, a team that is pretty much on tilt when they after just facing one Rays pitcher, and then this kind of allows the Rays to follow their method that we've seen them do of just capitalizing on one mistake and essentially failing upward to a victory. But when the backbone of that approach falters, like we're seeing now, that's why you see guys like Shane McClanahan, like Shane Baz, like Drew Rasmussen, who they're hoping can be anchors in that rotation. I mean, Shane McClanahan looks like a beast, even though the Yankees tagged him for a couple runs. Yeah. But you really gotta wonder, the Rays, they gambled on this for so long, and now it looks like it's finally gonna lose.
Yeah, it's kind of just like one of those things where they set the tone by doing it first. But then now they're going to have to adjust as other teams are doing it as well, and maybe are doing it a little bit better.
That's just the thing. It was a fad.
Yeah.
This was never a sustainable approach. It's like, all right, they're doing this. And now it seems hindsight's 2020. They were doing this to wait for guys like McClanahan, like Baz, like Rasmussen, so they could actually do what they do and build a rotation with guys they don't have to pay.
But I guess what I mean is like they – set the tone in terms of, you know, understanding what it means when a starting pitcher goes three times through a lineup
or
you know, the hitter hits this, you know, to this side of the field at this amount of time, which I don't know if it was you who mentioned it maybe in our last podcast episode, but like, or maybe it was someone in our group chat, but pretty ironic that a guy like Joe Maddon gets fired for not trusting analytics enough when it was him in Tampa who really brought about the analytical age, like, well, as a managerial like option.
He brought in the analytical age, but he also just brought in that brand of Mike Socha Angels baseball where you're just kind of aggressive and scrappy, and that kind of catches the other team off guard.
Yeah, I mean, it helps to have Ben Zobrist, but
but he also just had he had all of his guys. Like, there's certain players I think we could look at, and I'll go so far as to say G-Man Choi is one of them.
Oh yeah,
G-Man Choi, great Rays player. I think you could put him on any other team and he'd be okay, but he wouldn't get nearly as much attention.
Yeah. No, yeah, I agree. I mean,
like, they're a system team, the Rays, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it works for some people, and then, you move them and it falls apart.
And now they're going to have to do this all without Manuel Margot too, and Kevin Kiermaier's hurt again. It's a rough year for the Rays, and as a Yankees guy, I'm going to enjoy the wins. That's
all. I have absolutely no sympathy. No sympathy.
okay, come on. Okay, feel bad that Margot got injured at least.
I don't really care much about Margot. Like, yeah, you never want to see a guy get hurt.
Carted off.
Yeah, well, I didn't see what happened. They said, but I did see where they think it's a MCL sprain.
They're saying it's a sprained knee, and Cash said he's going to miss significant time. Pretty much what happened, he jumped up to try and catch Hicks's triple, hit the wall really hard, then landed awkwardly on the leg and was down.
It was kind of like a Acuna situation.
Yeah. Although when Acuna made impact, you could tell, okay, we know exactly what he did to his leg. Whereas with Margot, you knew it was a leg injury of some kind, you just weren't sure what he did.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know what? No sympathy for anyone.
All right, closing it out, ice cold. All right, well, that's gonna do it for today, folks. You can find me on Twitter at JoshBESNY. You can find Alec at Alec_MonteCalvo. You're gonna go rewatch Kenobi right now?
I gotta wait for the girlfriend to come home.
We
usually agree that we would watch it together, but I was just, I think within two episodes, like, nope, you go to work. If I'm home,
you're
I'm
on your own. It. Not happening.
Yeah, on your own. I'll watch it with her. Also, yeah. I just want to say this camera is making me look like Kenobi a little bit.
I was going to say, you kind of got the Ewan McGregor thing going on here.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I'll definitely be watching it again tonight. I've kind of taken a page out of your book. I've been going through Friday Night Lights again.
Oh, all right.
Kind of like light watching. I'm running through that. I'm running through Sopranos.
Oh, we started a Sopranos rewatch too.
Yeah. Well, so this is like my first time actually sitting down and watching through it.
All right. Keep me posted. You're going to have a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. I'm like on season four right now. But
of the Sopranos.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Wow. You're way into
it. Oh yeah. I've been doing it for I think a month now or so. And it's funny, I started watching it and my girlfriend like came in and she was kind of like watching it over my shoulder, and now she's engrossed in it and she's like, don't watch anymore because I want to try to catch up. But I'm like at least a season ahead of you. Like,
all right. So we're going to wrap this up right now, folks. Be sure to tune in next week, and we will have more baseball and maybe some more TV talk for you then too. All right.